Hi everyone, welcome at this new episode of the Tech for Good podcast, and today is about quantum computing. I'm very excited actually because we have the distinguished professor of quantum computing and quantum internet of the Technical University of Delft, which is the leading institute in the world on this topic. And I have an interview with him, and we are going to discuss everything around quantum. Where are we? What's the maturity? What can you expect from this? So if you are an IT leader, CXO, Chief Digital, CTO, CIO, and you're really interested in what is the next step on quantum, please listen to this podcast and hope you can help you to the next step. So hello everyone and welcome to this podcast of today. And today we are talking about quantum computing and maybe also a bit about quantum internet. And we have a very impressive thought leader on this topic in our podcast today. He's a professor at the Technical University of Delft. He's a distinguished professor, actually, on quantum computing and quantum internet. And it's very nice that you're joining us in this podcast today. Thanks for that, Ronald. Can I call you Ronald, by the way?
Yes, absolutely. And very happy to be here.
Okay, thanks. So Ronald, before we kick off, can you give a bit of an impression on who you are and what you're doing in on a daily basis?
Yes, so as you said in the introduction, I'm a professor at the TU Delft. It means that part of my job is doing research, and this research in the field of quantum technologies, specifically quantum computing and quantum internet. In that regard, I also do some teaching. But I'm also very active in trying to organize the national field around quantum technologies and getting different parties involved. So, in that regard, this podcast is actually very relevant also for me. It's a way to connect to people that are not inside the field of quantum technologies, but may actually be confronted with it or can make use of it in the coming decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I also understood you're also part of the steering committee, the chair of the steering committee around quantum as well, the Quantum Delta NL.
Yes, so the field has organized itself into a foundation, Quantum Delta NL. This has basically all the major stakeholders involved. And we wrote a comprehensive national agenda for quantum technologies. This was offered to the State Secretary of Economic Affairs, Mona Keijzer, last year. And we actually even got a starting impulse, a little bit of money to get this agenda going of 23.5 million earlier this year. So things are moving. Actually, you see that the coordination of this field, the getting together is really creating a critical mass to. It's really geared at the Netherlands, but I think it will have a bigger impact in Europe and hopefully also worldwide.
Okay, and you were explaining, well, I introduced you already as a professor of the Technical University Delft, but you're also working for QTEC. Can you explain what QTEC is? Is that related to the Technical University?
The QTEC is a collaboration between the University of Delft and TNO. And TNO is a Dutch research and technology organization. And this was actually started this collaboration about 6 years ago now from the observation that there was a lot of excellent science coming out of the TU Delft. And there was this opportunity seen, right, with the advent of quantum technologies. There was this opportunity to see, can we make a step from science to actual technologies, and what would that take? And out of that thinking, out of this thought exercise, came the idea to actually bring scientists together with applied engineers inside one building. And so this is what QTEC actually is. It's housed in a building at the TU Delft campus. But the people from TNO and TU Delft are really working together in different mixed teams. And currently there's about 200 researchers working on the different challenges related to quantum computing and quantum internet in this institute.
Okay. Yeah, I also understood you have a sort of labs in the QTEC as well, sort of structure. So you have multiple labs on different kind of topics. Is that correct?
Yes. So we are the way QTech is now organized is into different divisions. So there's one division working on quantum internet, so the application of quantum technologies in communication. One is working on quantum computing, and we have a third division that works more on the foundational aspects that of foundational technology, I should say, that can then feed into the other divisions. And QTech has its own research labs. So we have, if you would visit us one day, maybe after COVID is over, you can actually see we have really, really interesting high-tech working there. These quantum computers and quantum internet devices are, we will talk about that a little bit later, but this is a nascent technology, and you really see this technology evolving very fast inside our labs.
Okay, great. Yeah, so quantum computing, I think, is a very interesting topic. Yeah, so we hear a lot about artificial intelligence and so on, but what we also hear now last couple of years is a lot of new discussions on quantum and actually what is the status of quantum, where are we, and so who better to ask than you? So what is your view on the quantum topic, where we are currently? So can you maybe explain a bit what your view is on the maturity of quantum computing in this sense, but also the sort of challenges you see currently that you are working on?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a very interesting time. Actually, if we go back to the days when we started QTech about 6 years ago, I think most people saw quantum technologies as something that would happen at some point in time. It would happen eventually, but not in a sort of timeline that they could envision. So it would not happen in the next 20 years. It would happen at some point. And what has changed in the past 6 years is that we've, you know, through many breakthroughs, both in theory but also in the technology itself, is that we can now actually see roadmaps that lead to real quantum computers making impact on society within 15, 20 years. And actually, what has happened in the past few years is that starting from devices that were really research and endeavors, I would say, the first small devices have been made that are now at the level that they are so complex that they cannot be simulated anymore by any classical, what we call classical means any conventional computer. Mm-hmm. So one of the milestones in this field was the experiment by Google published last year, in which they did an experiment that one can debate whether it was really better than any simulation that could have been done on a computer, but definitely it's in the same ballpark. Mm-hmm. So we are really at this tipping point where the quantum machine is at least in principle able to do something that is not tractable anymore on a conventional machine. And that's actually very exciting because it means that we're entering a new era in which it's sort of unknown territory, right? I mean, we are scaling up the devices and we are getting into a territory where what we're doing cannot easily be checked anymore or verified by the machines that we currently have.
Exactly. There were some counter, I think responses on that that claim around quantum supremacy. You were just talking about. What's your view on that? Where we are on this?
When Google made the announcement, or actually when the fact that the announcement was coming, it was kind of leaked into the community. People heard about it, and IBM quickly responded that it was not yet exactly at this tipping point, but. It doesn't really matter whether this experiment was exactly beyond the tipping point or right before. I think everybody agrees that we are really at this stage where quantum technology can do as complex a task, or very specific task, by the way, as a supercomputer. And I think whether there are still a factor of 2 or 10 somewhere in between is actually not relevant. I think if we look back 10 years from now, if we look back to these days, and I'm 100% sure that people will say this was the tipping point where we went from small quantum computers that we know exactly what they do and we can calculate that with our classical machines to a new era in which they do something that we cannot simulate anymore on our normal supercomputer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand.
If it's okay, maybe we should dive one step into the technology itself. Why that is the case, and why I'm saying this factor of 2 or even 10 is not important.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that the power of quantum technologies comes from the fact that you start with a different unit of information, right? So all our current information processing and communication is basically based on processing and sending of bits, which are 0 or 1.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of quantum technologies is to replace this with bits that can be 0 and 1 at the same time. And that means you get actually more options into your computer. In a sense, you can do many calculations in parallel. And the scaling of that number of calculations actually goes exponential in the number of qubits. So that means that every time you add a qubit, the number of states that you're working with is increased by a factor of 2. And that means that if I'm now talking about an experiment by Google that has maybe 53 quantum bits, and maybe that is sort of right below the tipping point, if I just add 2 qubits to that, mm-hmm. right, and make it 55, the number of states I'm involving goes up by a factor of 4. So I'm quickly, increasing the state space. If I add 10 qubits, I add a factor of 2 to the power 10, which is about 1,000 already. And so, whether we are now with 53 qubits on this tipping point or 55 or 56, not so important.
Exactly. So what you're saying, if I get you correctly, because of things like superposition and entanglement and so on, this computing power is in essence sort of exponential. And if you look at the more traditional ways of calculating, because it's only zeros and ones and so on, it's more linear in that sense. So the discussion is not so much. How would you describe the discussion in that sense? Because you said you don't need that many qubits in that sense to really have the possibility to make very complex calculations, for example, or is that not the argument here?
Yeah, we have to distinguish two scenarios. So the first scenario, and this is what Google has actually done, is to find some task at which a quantum computer can beat the classical computer. And they found a task of which we don't know that it has any use. It may not have any use at all. But just to show that in principle, the quantum computer can beat the best classical computers.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, what we are after in the end is that the quantum computer can do a task that is interesting and useful, right, and has some positive societal impact, and to do such a task better than a classical computer. And actually, if we think about such tasks, we know a number of such tasks, we would actually need quite a bit bigger quantum computer. So we're not yet at the point where they can make a useful impact, but we are at the point where we can show that really the complexity of the machine is so large that it has this power to really do better than classical computers. And I think in the end, there is not really much debate in the community that this experiment is a milestone. The only discussion is really about, okay, can the classical computer do it in one day or in 2 weeks or in a year? And as I said, because of this exponential scaling, that discussion if you zoom out, the discussion is not so relevant, because Google will, or other people will do another experiment this year or next year, and then it will definitely have crossed this boundary.
Okay, this is also your argument in this, that a lot of these cases that are actually run on supercomputers are potentially the same use cases that you see for quantum, like climate change calculations, protein simulations, those kind of things.
That's a very interesting question. Huh? So where is the use for quantum computers? And it may well be that this goes in phases, right? That there will be a phase in which quantum computers will be like our current supercomputers, probably actually in sync with our current supercomputers, so that there's a classical quantum hybrid way of calculating things. So what quantum computers are good at is really certain specific hard calculations. And examples of those calculations are indeed calculating the behavior of molecules, because actually any or certain material properties that are very complex. And quantum computers are good at that because in the end, those problems are quantum mechanical in nature. They're actually hard to calculate because, you know, these molecules behave as a quantum system. And quantum computers are, of course, also quantum systems. So they are very efficient in simulating what goes on into these in these molecules, whereas our normal computers are, in a way, too simple to simulate this, right? Because with the bits that can only be 0 or 1, it's very hard to simulate or to calculate what's going on in a system where things are always 0 and 1 at the same time. And that is actually what gives this a pretty hard limit on, I mean, if you think about the number of qubits, that with just, you know, in the 50s of qubits, 50 or 60 qubits, you can already beat a supercomputer. This is quite crazy. That number is super small, the number of qubits. But it's just because this, you know, this number of states involved is so large. Mm-hmm. So indeed, it will start probably with specific hard computational tasks, and they are in this realm. Calculating properties of certain molecules, calculating material properties, these kind of things is what it will start with. But there are also people thinking about, can we do optimization problems that are hard on a quantum computer, and many other different, I mean, climate models, for instance. So there's many cases in which, you know, a lot of data is linked to each other in a very complicated way, where quantum computers may actually have a big advantage.
Do you also, you were making a relation with quantum physics, right? When you talked about the proteins, yeah. I know you had a different word for it, but you know which one I meant. Do you also see a connection between mathematical models that we can't solve currently, and maybe the use of quantum? Can we, for example, calculate things that we never were able to calculate before because we use traditional ways of calculating? Is that your view on that as well?
Yes. That is definitely the case. And there are some certain examples of that, where we know that a quantum computer can solve certain problems efficiently, where a normal computer cannot do that. Actually, one very famous example that was already discovered in the 90s is finding the prime factors of large numbers. So that is actually a task where a normal computer is very bad at. So it's quite easy on a normal computer to check whether you have the prime factors, right? So if you want to check whether 3 times 5 is 15 for a big number, that's easy on a normal computer. But actually, if you get the number 15, you have to find the prime factors. This is very inefficient. And this is just actually the basis of much of the security that we currently have on the internet and in the RSA system. And in the 90s, Peter Shor actually found an efficient algorithm on a quantum computer. So a quantum computer can actually efficiently find the prime factors of large numbers. And so this is one example. And there are many other examples that are currently being looked into. But indeed, so difficult mathematical problems. But in a sense, if you think about these physics problems or the proteins, they are of course also mathematical problems. It's the fact that the math behind it is tricky and complex what makes the quantum computers more powerful in this respect.
I understand. Yeah. So today's podcast is also about tech for good. So the mm-hmm. sort of the purpose we can get out of technology. Do you believe that quantum can also make the world a bit a better place? And what kind of things would you think about? When you talk about that,
Yeah, absolutely. So the way I see it is that the development of these quantum technologies, and let's take the quantum computer as an example. I think in a way it says, you're finding glasses to look at the world that was hidden for you before, right? There's sort of a new world opens up for us. And I think that will give us many, many opportunities. You can think, for most example, if you think about you want to have a battery that does not have energy loss, or you want to transmit energy without loss, right? This is very important. We know that certain materials that we call superconductors, they can actually do this job. So there are materials in nature that do not have loss when transmitting energy. But the problem is that to get these materials superconducting, you need to cool them down. And we know that some materials can probably do this at higher temperatures, and we're actually close to getting something that works at room temperature. And we know the calculation that we have to do to solve what's going on inside these superconductors, but our current computers cannot solve this problem. As I said before, they're a bit too simplistic to actually calculate these material properties. So one can think that if one has a quantum computer, you can actually understand and predict the properties of these materials, and then also perhaps find a recipe to build a material that is really superconducting at room temperature, and you would have an almost perfect battery. Mm-hmm. Let me give you another example that has to do with climate. I don't know if this is well known for people to listen to this, but actually a large percentage of the world's energy today is consumed to make fertilizer. This is really 3-5% of our world's energy consumption. And why is this number so high? That is because one of the steps in making fertilizers is extremely inefficient. And so we do this with brute force. But as it happens, there is a bacteria, we know the bacteria, that performs that exact same process. The technical name is nitrogen fixation for the experts. That same process is done very efficiently by this bacteria inside plants. And so we actually have an example of how to do it efficiently, but we cannot simulate or calculate how the bacteria does it. But if we would have a quantum computer, we would be able to calculate that process, and then we could apply it ourselves on an industrial scale. And in that sense, we could significantly decrease the energy consumption of the world.
Yeah, I understand. Very good example. Maybe just to go a step back, we already discussed a bit the maturity of quantum and your expectations on where it will go for the next year, next year as well, actually. What are the current challenges that you see? And can you tell us a bit more about what you're doing on a daily basis in this field?
Yeah. The current challenges, maybe one could say they are twofold. So on the one hand, we really have to mature the technology itself. So there's a lot of engineering challenges that are involved to make a quantum computer run. It doesn't run like a normal computer, but you have to protect these quantum states and at the same time make them do certain calculations. So to scale these devices that can do that up to hundreds, thousands, or millions of quantum bits, that's a real technical challenge. Looking from the other side, we know that we will in a decade or two, maybe within 15 years or so, we will have such a machine. This is the chances that we have a machine are very high. So we should also try to understand what exactly we can do with this machine. So up to now, I gave you a few examples that we already know what we can do. Mm-hmm. But I think it's fair to say that on a large scale, we have no idea what exactly can and cannot be done with a quantum computer. Mm-hmm. So a really big part of this field is now working this out, trying to do either via formal mathematics to try to find classes of application, but also to look at certain specific applications to see, for example, we have the port of Rotterdam, maybe have some logistical challenges there. Can we use a quantum computer to actually solve these challenges in a more efficient way than we are trying to do it now? So to really take concrete examples of challenges that we face in the world and see what can a quantum computer do.
Okay.
So that is the other side that's happening now. And ideally, of course, these two come together. And the use cases, the applications will also steer the technology development and vice versa.
Okay. You were talking about applications. And that triggers another question for me. So if you look at supercomputers, for example, you can run an application. You can almost run Windows on it or even Word if you would like. And often things are done in things like R. How do you actually run an application on a quantum computer? Is it a circuit that you need to program? Or is this also part of the research you're still doing to figure out how this application should actually run on a quantum computer?
Yes. Actually, this is a very good point. When we started with QTech 6 years ago, we also identified this point, right? So you can have physicists that run some circuit consisting of some quantum particles that are doing your calculation. But in the end, it will be a computer that you have to program. So we started to collaborate very early on with computer scientists and people that are working on computer architectures. And actually, you can get quite far by mapping the different layers of abstraction that we have currently in computers onto quantum computers. So of course, if you are a user of a quantum computer, you don't want to know about all the details of the circuit below and what's going on. You want to program at a high level. And so over the past years, people have developed interfaces for these different layers of abstraction. And in fact, we have also a platform online, Quantum Inspire, that is powered by QTech, where you can actually do such programming. It's not yet at the highest level of abstraction, but it's a level of abstraction that you can already play a little bit and have a feeling of what quantum does. So all these layers are being developed, and there's a lot of stuff. I mean, if you go to the Quantum Inspire website, there's a lot of stuff that's already hidden from you that goes from you typing in some simple code, some operation you want to do, into the physical execution of the gates into your quantum bit. So indeed, this is something that had to be developed and is being developed. And it's a very active area of research, actually.
Yeah. Okay, but that means also if you're a developer, you do need to learn more about quantum, but you don't have to go into quantum physics because you can talk to these layers, but you still have to understand like gates and so on to make a program actually run on a quantum. Is that correct?
I think that depends on what level you want to develop. So just like, I mean, if you say you're running Windows, of course, Windows runs on something else, and that runs on something else. And we envision that the same will happen in the area of quantum computing. So you will have certain standard protocols or subroutines that are already pre-programmed for you that you can call. And in the end, I think most developers will be one level up, so they will not understand or have to know much about the individual gates, but they can use certain routines and just stitch them together in the way that they want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our audience, we have a variety of roles, of course, that of people listening to this podcast, but most of them are CXO leaders, yeah, so CTOs, CIOs, chief digitals. What can they expect from quantum? So if they are listening to this podcast and they think, well, this might be interesting, what would you advise them to do? And what do you think they can get out of this?
Yes. So I think the first is that people have to understand that this technology will come, and it will become important in the next decade. So the first thing to do is to be prepared by being informed, and we are also trying with the national agenda, at least here in the Netherlands, to actively reach out. But I think for many companies, and we. You actually see this happening in most of the companies already, that people need to have a certain level of information about what's coming in the coming years, and then try to map that onto their own business. One step further is, of course, to think about, can quantum technology be helpful for your business? Or can you play a role perhaps in the production processes, right? Different, you know, the quantum computers build up of many components, many different layers from hardware to software. And much expertise that was being trained on classical computers can actually be useful in this quantum regime. So I think this is also a matter of conversation. Try to talk to people that understand what quantum computers can do, and see how your business can connect to this. Because I have to say, I think most certainly large companies have already done this in the past years. The awareness is definitely growing. But I would really call on all companies to do this and look for the opportunities, because the opportunities will be there, but they will differ by business, of course. And myself, and I think everybody in the Quantum Delta NL Foundation, we are very happy to help you to see what you can do, and also to find partners to work with, because that's another thing, right? It can be kind of a zoo. Who do you have to talk to? How do I find a person that knows something about what matters to you? We can also help in actually pointing you in the right direction.
Okay, I understand. So I also see Technical University of Delft as one of the leading institutes on this topic in the world. Do you see on a more global scale, this is also picking up also in other regions? China, the US.
Absolutely. If you look at what has happened in the past 3-4 years, the investment that has gone into this area, this has gone up very, very, very fast. All the big tech companies are currently involved in this field. China has a very aggressive program to develop quantum technologies. And also at the European level, a quantum technology flagship program was started in 2016, actually under the Dutch presidency of the EU. That is a 1 billion research R&D program, I should say. And currently in Brussels, they're talking about what they call infrastructure call. So they want to, thinking about setting up European-wide more deployment type calls. And these are also really programs that are of the size of order 1 billion euros. So this is definitely happening. And I think people are aware and acting, and as the investment is growing, you will see this field also speeding up.
Okay, thank you very much. It was a great pleasure to talk to you about this topic. Professor Ronald Hansson, are there any final words you would like to share with us and for our listeners?
I hope that you have gotten some idea of what quantum technology will bring to you. I will definitely advise you, please find out more about quantum, see what it will bring for you, and if there's any opportunity, try to get engaged, and don't hesitate to get in contact with us.